absolute pleasure to welcome back to the podcast one of my favorite interviews in the history of the Troy Farkas Show, which happened about this time last year, Matt Woodworth. Thank you again for joining me. It's actually very appropriate that you join me because I'm searching for some wisdom in my life right now. I need to bounce some things off some people, and I think you might be the perfect person to talk to you about some of these things. So I'm glad that you are here. Welcome back to the show from Bend, Oregon. So good to see you again. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing well, Troy. The day you texted me, I was like kind of thinking a couple of days before, I was like, man, it'd be really fun if, you know, I could hop back on and talk with Troy on this podcast we did a while ago. It went well. It was awesome. It was an honor, which I told you, to be here and do this. But yeah, I'm willing to hear these things you want to bounce off back and forth. Yeah.
Before we get to those things, you are a loyal listener of the show. You are a brand new owner of the Troy Farkas Show mug, which, by the way, if any of you guys want a mug out there, just message me. I'll get you one. Instagram, text me, however. You got the mug. You're a big fan of the show. Off the top of your head, I'm putting you on the spot. What are some of your favorite episodes of the show from the past year and change?
Past year and change. This one's definitely recency bias, but I really want to get into yoga. So your last one was that I saw with, I'm going to blank her the name, but with the bunny and the wine and yoga.
Yeah,
Jessica. Really inspired me to go do yoga. And then a lot of them going back, you've done, I stink with names, even as a teacher. But Herder, right?
Kevin Herder.
Yeah. Probably that one. That's just a cool thing. That's a local thing from back home where it's like, wow, you were doing that and I'm doing this. It was that's a cool connection. And like seeing you do everything amongst all these people is a really cool like separation of, I know Troy and he does this and this is a myth. That's really cool. So yeah, those two, I think in like a personal way, inspired me to go do yoga again. And then just like the whole nostalgic back home connection was Herder was cool.
Yeah, those were some of my favorite ones. I love talking to Kevin. It's really cool talking to someone that I grew up with. And see, I mean, I knew him well. I used to drive him to school. We were on the same team together for years. And so it was really cool seeing him as an adult now. I mean, he's playing in front of national TV audiences in the playoffs. He's having a ball doing his thing. He gets I think he's now makes $16 million a year. He just signed a new contract with the Atlanta Hawks this past summer, which is awesome. Then Jessica, that was definitely one of my favorite episodes, not recency bias, in the history of the show. So powerful. I don't think she said once the entire conversation. She was so put together. She was so moving in everything she said, and she made me feel bad about myself because, A, this girl can speak more eloquently than anyone I've ever met, and I am the one that's behind a microphone. She should be the one behind a microphone, and B, she just seems like she has her life way more put together than I do.
Yeah, I remember on the note of like those space gap words, my uncle, who's this like very stoic back in the day dude, was like, you're an English teacher now. I want you to make sure no one says like not everything's a simile, Matt. And I was like, damn, that's like a really good idea. As my response, I was like, ooh. So every time I'm in those scenarios, I'm like counting. We're like, oh, I did say that. So yeah, it's a skill I admire too.
When you actually set your mind to listening out for the number of times you say like, if I listen back to myself on a podcast, you will get annoyed with yourself so quickly. You don't even realize that you're doing it in real time, but then you go back and listen to it and you're looking for it. Because you can just gloss by it because it is just such a part of our vernacular now to use like in every other word to set up every sentence. But when you actually look for it, it's so annoying and you feel so bad about yourself.
Yeah. And the like in a vernacular sense and in a language sense, I just got off a unit about languages and whatnot. But we all have.
You're a teacher, by the way, just saying for the audience that does not remember.
So we have every language has that gap word or those gap words. We just happen to use like, and it's kind of an obnoxious one. Like it has that hard K and it has like that simile aspect, where like in Italian, it's just like, it's an M. That's it. You just sound like you're humming for a quick second and then you're moving on.
Gosh. Okay. Well, hopefully we can remedy that as you listen back to this podcast afterwards and realize how many times that you and I say like after this conversation. So either way, glad to have you here. So at this current moment in my life, I'm having kind of an off week. I feel unmotivated for once, and I'm a very motivated person. It is very rare for me in the middle of the day to want to go sit on the couch and not do anything. I've got an entire to-do list of things, things I need to accomplish, projects both short-term and long-term, and I just don't want to do them. I'm feeling down in the dumps. I'm, for some reason, questioning my life's direction. Am I in the right place? Am I surrounded by the right people? Do I even love what I'm doing anymore? How am I going to sustain interest in this for 40 years? It's crazy to me that the conventional wisdom is, hey, go to school for something and then love that for 40 years and you're good. I love what I do right now, but for some reason I'm just freaking out about right now. Man, I can't imagine doing this for 5 more years. This is craziness. I'm going to have to do something else. Well, then what do I do? What is my short-term plan, long-term plan? All this to say, do you ever go through periods like that where, because I know you and I are similar in the fact that, and this is why we relate so well, we're both kind of loners, we're adventurous spirits, we like doing our own thing, we like getting out of our comfort zone, doing new things, but with that comes a lot of downtime, reflection time, a lot of wondering about, is my life in going in the right course? You wonder if you're being a good person, all of those things. So since you were kind of out in Oregon, I mean, you're from upstate New York, you're on the other side of the country, so far away from your family. Do you ever get in those modes where you just, why am I teaching out in Oregon? I should be back home or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, things, the chronological order of things I've realized happen so well to where I have been doing the same conversation, these same thoughts for like 6 months, to where I'm going through, ooh, quarter life crisis, you want, we call it that, whatever, but longing for something new or longing for something that'll make you feel better in the moment, or doing something that makes you feel better in the moment. And then I listened to the Daily Stoic this morning, which I believe we both listen to very well. It's another place we connect. And it was about, like, your body wants to be at homeostasis, equilibrium, the entire time. Not just in like a scientific sense, like your glucose levels and whatnot. Like, just your being wants to be at equal.
It's a survival
tactic. So like when we, yeah. And then when we say like, cool, if I want, like I want to move to Portland in the summer. If I'm like, cool, I can get through this awful moment right now because mentally I know I will eventually manage myself enough to get to that spot where that's great for a few days. But after a while or after a few months, I have to find a way to make my homeostasis that consistent contentness or happiness, to where it's a process. And like, you have to find the things that give you that hit, because
right,
it's a drug. And that's why people tend to like fall into abusing them. It's like, it gives you that hit. Like, I feel good. Or like, if you're like, my love language is quality time. So like, this person, the quality time with this person makes me feel so great, but I want to have that quality time all the time, but you can't. Like, quality time over time gets diluted. So it's maintaining in therapy, they're like, you need to live in the moment. Like Seneca, we suffer more in imagination than we do in reality. To where like, I'm thinking about, oh, like 6 months ago, I should have done this. Like, nope, it was over. Let it go. Or in 6 months, I want to be like full-time job, city I want to live in, friends I want to live with, games I want to go to. But that's not going to make me feel better tomorrow when I'm like, oh, this kid's raising his hand again. Like, we covered this yesterday. It's how do I maintain that momentary happiness all the time? But it takes time to make that happy time. So like, moving forward, you just have to coach yourself through it. It's this moment today, like driving in the sun makes me happy. Or like, this little extra coffee out of a very nice Troy Show mug is amazing. Like, those little things. And people have been telling me this for 6 months since I started this conversation that you just asked me about. And the dean of my program was like, find the things that make you happy. And like, it's taken 6 months to try to find one thing where it's like, okay, now I got to find four more for the week. So, and journaling will help and all that stuff. And then just chatting, spending time with people that you can bounce ideas off of. I don't know. It's a long-winded answer to say, I'm going through the same thing right now.
Yeah.
But I think It's also, you gotta remind ourselves, this is normal. Like, our 20s, everyone tells us our 20s are supposed to be the best time of our life. Like, cool, we have a pandemic involved in ours. That sucks. But it's supposed to be mysterious and ambiguous and just challenging. Which, yeah. I think when you look back at it, you're like, oh, wow, I did all this in my 20s. It was challenging. That satisfactory gives you that hit where it's like, oh, that was the good time.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just pushing through and taking time to make time to have time, I guess.
That's the hardest thing to remember, is that so many of us are going through these things and battling these thoughts. And it's also so funny that when you and I are 30, when we're 35, we're going to look back at this conversation and say to ourselves, why were we freaking out about that thing? Why was Troy freaking out about his job? He works for Spotify. Dude, you had it made. What were you so worried about? It's so funny how we'll look at that conversation. And also, I think you would kind of reference this, but I just want to clarify. So speaking to that hit, right? So I moved to Portsmouth in August, and when you get there, everything's new. The apartment is new. You're developing new routines, a new place. You're exploring the local area. You're venturing out of the town a little bit, and it's all so new. It's exciting. It's like a new relationship. It's the honeymoon phase. But then eventually, you reach homeostasis, where everything becomes, okay, I know what this is now. And so now that I have reached that point, 6 months in, I'm now saying to myself, I'm getting a little bit antsy. Should I go? I feel too comfortable here. Should I go somewhere? So I wonder, have you felt that in your time out in Oregon?
Yeah, it is that honeymoon phase. And like, on top of mine, my program is a dichotomous living situation. Like, I'm, for a lack of a better term, I'm stationed in Bend. Like, my program, we sign up to be teachers and they send us out to anywhere on the West Coast, from Hawaii to Boise to Las Vegas to Seattle. But every summer, we hub up and come back to Portland. So it's like, I'll get through, like, this time right now, like after my birthday, right in the middle of February, near the end, it's like, ooh, I'm antsy. I want to get to Portland. I want to see all my friends. I want to live there in the summer and have fun. And then it's a weird balance, because I want to enjoy Ben. Like, I love taking you out here and showing you around and doing things. And I think the best way to do it is, it's probably some Instagram post that was about, you mentioned dating and honeymoon phases. It was every 2 months, go on a getaway, or every 2 or 3 weeks, like, have intentional time with each other. So, like, in our sense, when it comes to living situations or locations, like, you spent 3 or 4 months being a nomad, like, that gave you a hit every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
To where now, I think it's just making time for that coffee shop trip down the block. Okay, I like that one. Let me go back there. Like, maybe I'm feeling down, intentionally make a time for, all right, I'll go bring a book, bring a journal, or just go sit, have fun, be by myself, but amongst people. Like, that New York City thing that I miss. It's like, I can be amongst 8 million people, but I'm alone. Versus I can be amongst 30 and be like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's trying to, like, take a turkey baster of that honeymoon phase and being like, ooh, I'm going to save this.
Uh-huh.
And then break glass when needed. So, like, I've done that because being here, like, it's a lot different than growing up. Like, it's rural. I'm not used to that. Like, Albany in the capital region is bustling, even though we don't think it is until we kind of leave.
Yeah.
Like, it's the state capital. It's 3 hours from everywhere. Like, Montreal, Boston, New York, Syracuse, Toronto. They're all close. Where, like, I'm 6 hours from almost any friend that I want to hang out with on a daily basis, besides, like, who I live with. So, like, I've had to be like, I need this thing in a couple of weeks. Like, I started going to coffee shops more and more, and then breweries here, and a hike here or there. It's just, I think, saving your hits for when you need them, I guess, would be a way to put it.
I've been struggling with the word perspective recently, because when I'm going through I'm not depressed right now. I've been depressed. I've certainly been depressed before in Connecticut. I had it in Colorado for a bit. I think this is just some weird blip that I'm going through that'll just be, you know, a couple of days phase and then I'll get over it, which is great. I'm thankful for that. But I always go back to, Troy, you have an incredible life. You live by yourself. You can support yourself. Great friends. You're close-ish to home, close-ish to friends. You've got a new girlfriend now. Your life is great. You should never, ever be sad because there's innocent people in Ukraine who are getting invaded right now. There's people in, you know, Afghanistan who in September just had their lives completely flipped upside down, and insert that into so many other situations around the world. I have nothing to be upset about. I have running water. 60 to 70% of the world doesn't have that. You should never, ever be sad or angry because you could be in so many other situations. On the flip side, you have other people, and I solicited some feedback on an Instagram post yesterday. I asked people, hey, just feeling down in the dumps right now, how do you cope? What do you do? And I got a couple people who said to me, lean into your feelings, embrace them, recognize that everyone goes through this, don't beat yourself up, be kind to yourself, all that stuff. So I'm just kind of wondering, whenever you go through stuff like that, how do you view it? Do you view it as, I shouldn't be happy at all, and then boom, you pick yourself back up because you remember how great your life is, or you kind of lean into it and feel bad for yourself and you talk to people about it and you just kind of wallow in it, you listen to a sad song, you have a cry, whatever, you treat yourself to a glass of wine, whatever. What do you do?
I would like to say I lean into it, let it go, and like then I move on. But it takes a while. Like these blips, like it's something that I'm kind of happy that came out of COVID, like the mental health awareness and whatnot. Like I've sat with students and had very candid conversations because they're like, dude, they call me dude and I tell them they got to stop that, but they don't. But it's like, yeah, Jimmy V said you have to cry, laugh, and think every day. That's a day. 8 hours of those things, that's a full day. And I say that to my kids, students, and I have to say it to myself because, yeah, I have that worldview of, yeah, these in Ukraine, shit's getting crazy, or Afghanistan. And it's realizing like, yeah, that's their reality. It's not necessarily mine. Like, yes, I want to help out, but I can't help them if I'm dead. I can't help them if I'm lethargic. Like, it's lean into it. Maybe I journal a little bit. I'm not great at it. I need to work on that a little more, but it's finding one of those little hits and be like, all right, let me just take time to sit in a room alone by myself for a little while in the dark, play some music, whether it's like a sad song, lean into it, like the 90s on a bus and start crying out the window, like Nickelback, like back in the middle school or early high school, just sitting on the window, like I feel good now, or Linkin Park. Like, yeah, I would do that too. But it's also, I've realized you have to verbalize, you have to say things, because when you say it, you're processing it in different ways. Like you said, yeah. Oh, I did just say that. That does hit different. And not necessarily like, okay, I'm going to go talk to Troy today. He'll tell me what to do to make me feel better. Maybe Troy won't tell me what to do when I feel better. But as long as I get to talk with Troy and have that time and say it myself, like that's the biggest thing I've noticed, whether it's my roommates here, the friends I have developed here, my colleague, and honestly, my students. Like, I'm only 10 years older than them. I'm their sister's age, your brother's age. Like, the little kids, maybe even some of their parents' age in the pre-K. Like, realizing we're all, not to quote High School Musical, we're all in this together. Like, we need to work on it. Like, we can't be afraid to say, I'm having a shit day. And, like, it's brave to put it out on social media and be like, how do you do this? But when you do that, you realize, oh, all right. So I would say talking about it with someone. Like, my principal has let me, since October, really, every Monday I take an hour. My prep period on Mondays is not making tests, is not making essays or whatnot. It's I go to therapy. Like, I'm in my car sitting in the parking lot, headphones in, like looking like an idiot probably. But I'm in there talking. And I think talking, whether it's to solve the problem or just to say it, is great. Because writing, it's still in your head. Like, I love writing. That was what got me through quarantine number one back in Albany. And it kind of got me through quarantine two last year. But I realized It's not the same. Like, I have to talk to someone, whether it's my mom, my grandmother, or friends, family, or if it's a clinical therapist, like, I need to talk. So that's one thing I think helps.
Or you don't have to say it to anyone. I am a big fan of going on a walk and just talking out loud to myself. And yes, you know, you look a little strange doing it. Hopefully you don't pass by anyone when you do it. It's always funny when you do pass by someone and just kind of have to downplay it or act like you were on the phone or something. But I find great power in just saying something out loud. If you have an idea for something or if you're going through an emotion, just work through it, take it outside of your mind, extract it, say it out loud, and you'll see, is this dumb? Is this reasonable? Is this logical? So I think that's just good advice for anyone. If there's something trapped inside your head, just say it out loud and see how it lands. Also, you mentioned writing, you mentioned journaling. You say you're not good at it. And so I'm glad that you brought journaling up because this is a habit of many of the world's most successful people. You and I are fans of Seneca, Marcus Aurelius's journal Meditations was never meant to be published. He was just something that he kept, I think, while he was leading the Romans through battle. And now it's one of the most popular books that's ever been published, but it was his journal. And so journaling is a highly effective, highly practical tactic where you can just write, what are you feeling? What are your goals for the day? What do you hope to accomplish for the day? Whether you do it in the morning or the evening. A lot of people stray from journaling. What do I write about? How long do I write for? They try to do it right. Just like meditation, they try to do it right. There's no right or wrong way to do it. So how do you kind of approach journaling?
Basically, we have a phrase at school when the students aren't like fine-tuning their work, it's you're throwing up on the paper. But for me, like, that's what I journal about half the time. I don't have a prompt. I just have a couple spiral notebooks. I have a little pocket one. Like, over the summer, we lived on campus at UP in Portland. And every night, I would take 30, 40 minutes. I'd go on a walk. So, like, kind of what you said, I wouldn't say anything out loud. So go for a walk around campus. It's beautiful. It's right on the Willamette River. Portland in the summer is beautiful. And I would sit in our quad by myself at like midnight, sometimes 2 or 3 a.m.
Oh, yikes.
And just write. Like whatever came to mind, positive, negative, and just let it go. And have I gone back and looked at it? Not really. But like it's out. It's off the record. Like it's off of the tape in my head. It's keeping playing like, oh, I didn't do this. I didn't say the right thing. I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I didn't do that. So it's just consistency though. Cause that's what happened when I came to Bend. I got caught up in the rat race of school, 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 teaching. And then it's school, 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 my school. And then I got to maintain these friendships, these relationships with this person, that person. So I got away from what I did. And then October, I came home to school one day and I literally just sat in my bed. And I had my rugby ball was next to me. And that was kind of one of my things that got me through a lot of stuff in college was rugby. And I just grabbed the ball and sat there like in the fetal. And I could like, my room was like a kaleidoscope. And I was like, oh, something is wrong. And it's because I wasn't keeping up that consistent pattern of just throwing up on paper. Like I'm not out there trying to write the next meditation. Like I hope no one reads what I'm writing right now. Like I sound like an idiot. I sound like a whiny asshole to put it one way. But that also plays into the whole, what am I complaining about? I'm fine. Like I'm getting a free master's right now because I dedicated myself to 2 years of teaching. Like I don't need to complain, but you do. Like it gets a negative connotation, but you need to let it out. You need to talk about it and do it. So consistency is key because routine is key. So like, I know you have talked about a million times, you're like morning routine. Like I have been striving for a morning routine so much, but I fall off the wagon and I don't get back up on it. Mm. So that's because another one of your podcasts was like the gratitude stuff. One of the girls talked about gratitude journals way back when.
Yeah. Jasmine.
Yeah. And like, I want to do that, but then it's like, it's kind of weird to tell myself I'm grateful for something. Like, but it's breaking that ice and consistently doing it. You get comfortable with it. And then, hey, 6 months later, you're awaiting that 6 month kick to like, all right, I got to go do something. And it never comes. I guess that's enlightenment to an extent, but you don't get there. We're also in an age of drastic, quick satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's like swipe left, right, match, no, no, no. Like, dislike, dislike, like. It's like, take some time. Like, it's going to come. Consistency over time. Diamonds are made from pressure, but it's over time too. And like the rivers carve. Oh, cliche after cliche. Consistency and time. That's all you got to do. And it may sound rich, but like, because I'm not fulfilling it right now, but like, I know I have to do it. But do I do it? Not every day.
Consistency is key. I actually just titled a blog post with that title, Consistency is Key, recently. With everything, with anything you do, whether it's you want to have a workout routine, a journaling routine, a morning routine, you just got to do it. I think, it, as the cliche goes, 21 days to build a habit before you really can't function normally without doing it. And so I built my morning routine. I had the same morning routine for a couple of years. Up until very recently, I had to make some adjustments in my life where I was now staying up later. I was working later. And so I was sleeping in. And I gotten used to waking up when the sun was still down. I wake up in the darkness, have my cup of coffee, hours before work started, hours before anyone can get to me. My phone is off and it's okay. But then I was starting to wake up. The sun is up. The workday has almost started. I feel like I already am missing something, or I owe someone something. I've missed my workout window. I was a train wreck because for a month I was out of my routine. And so it just goes to show you that routines are very important. I think they keep you very grounded. They keep your head on straight. They keep your priorities in order. So I do hope that you can get a solid morning routine, because whether that's you or anyone listening, it is, for me, the key that gets me in the right headspace to attack the day. And I don't have to do anything work-wise as part of my morning routine, but it's just, hey, my workout, my good breakfast, my sunshine, I need it in order to do my best the rest of the day. If I don't have it, I feel like a loser. I feel unproductive. I feel like I'm all over the place.
Yeah, it's that regret. It's like, dang it, I didn't do it. I didn't do it today.
And then eats
it. And that whole, yeah, you're like, all right, I got to wait 24 hours to do this again. Yeah. And then it's 48. And it's that 2-day rule. If you do something, you have to do it 2 days in a row every time. Don't let it get to two. Whether it's do it 2 days, skip one. But the routines, it's tough because once it's easy to get off of it, it's like sometimes it feels great to just be like, ah, I'm lazy. Like being sick for 4 days last week, I slept like 72 hours. Like I was up at like 8:30 when I'm usually, ideally, I'm up at 5:30. Or now it's like, okay, what do I do? So it's just balancing it. It's back to homeostasis, which I guess isn't the word of the day for this right now. But it is. It's just consistency in everything. And it's tough to do, and you kind of regret it every now and then, but it's a process. Everything is a process.
And with regards to journaling, I also do just want to say for you or for anyone, the paper is your friend. The page does not judge you. So it is in those moments where it is most appropriate to be whiny, to complain. It's kind of that voice inside your head that is spilled out onto the page. And you would never be friends with the voice inside your head. The voice inside your head is an asshole. You wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want to introduce the voice inside your head to anyone in your life.
No, not at all. It's that one character Inside Out they left out, and they left him out for a reason. No one yeah. likes it.
Yeah.
It's I would agree. That's a good way.
So I was very good at this at one point. I think the pandemic made me really reliant on technology again because it was the only way to communicate. And then my job became so reliant on technology that I'm now back in my over consuming ways of being on social media all the time, of imagining my phone vibrating in my back pocket when it's actually not, or just incessantly checking the time, even though I'm just seeing if anyone messaged me or anything. So do you ever catch yourself doing that? And if so, how do you try to rein it back in? Because I need to rein it back in right now, but I can't get myself to.
I know. I remember, what was it? Screenless Saturday, Troy.
Screenless Saturday, yeah. Thing? Oh, I miss it so badly. And it's so easy. It's so easy to implement again, but
yeah. But it goes back to that routine, to where as a teacher, it's kind of been weird because I was like, cool, I have 8 hours a day without my phone. But then it's like, colleagues at my school were like, hey, if I can't get to the office real quick, I'm going to text you. So now it's on my being. But the greatest thing, I think, is that do not disturb. Like my buddy, who I admire a lot of his traits, his phone's on do not disturb all the time. You have to double call him, triple text him to make it go through. And I was like, hey, why do you do this? And he was like, because it works. Like, I'm not on my phone all the time. And when I am, it's intentional time on my phone. Like, I'm on social media, I'm chilling. But, like, when I'm not, I have shit to do, or, like, I want time by myself. So I started doing that. Like, do not disturb is on my phone most of the time. The bedtime one, that routine, that morning or nighttime routine, like, it kills all notifications. I just, Apple did a good thing there, I think. It just sounds weird to say. But, like, do not disturb button actually, I think, is the one thing I appreciate most. And if, like, someone does need me, it still gets through somehow, which is weird. It's kind of like, well, they probably do know, actually, because they're probably listening. But, like, I had a friend a couple of days ago, and, like, this was, like, me time right before bed, some tea, a book, and my journal, which was a fun story to tell my students. They're like, oh, my God, you're such an old man. And I was like, okay, that's fine. It works.
Yeah.
But because it tells you now, like, this person has notifications off. Kind of like, hey, shut the fuck up. They're busy. She got through a couple times. And I'm like, yeah, we solved the problem. So I think that's the best thing. The screen time app, I put parental controls on my phone. So, like, my TikTok's limited. My Instagram is limited.
Smart.
Do I just hit the give me 15 more minutes?
I used to do that. And then I set up all those restraints on IG, TikTok, email every time though, after I hit my limit, 15 more minutes, I swear.
Yeah, but like in a weird cycle analysis way, like if you're hitting them, you're going to ignore it anyway. So like, it's kind of in my mind, if that comes up at the right time, I will get off.
Yeah.
I'll be like, yes, this is too much, or I only got a couple minutes left. It's not worth it. I'm going to get like two scrolls through, and it's probably some like suggested person, not even something I care about. So I think that's one thing potentially like technology has improved lately in terms of like a mindfulness exercise, more so than just like the dimming of the light. But yeah, it's that do not disturb, I think, is the best part, because I'm taking the initiative. I know I'm doing it. And subconsciously, if I'm not going to abide by it, I wasn't going to anyway. And then it's, okay, we start again tomorrow. It's just decreasing it. I have tried starting reading a lot more. Like in my downtime, I've read a few books that are really good, but that's a habit I haven't enjoyed much since middle school. So it's replacement. Honestly, it's that. Is my phone next to a book? Okay, I should probably get the book. Or like, just go for a walk instead of being on my phone. Just put some music in. I'm still getting that like technological hit, I guess. So yeah, do not disturb, intentional time, and just like talking to yourself a little bit and be like, all right, do you need this thing? No. Like, I deleted a lot of apps. I deleted a lot of people from apps. But like, I kind of gauge like in a minimalistic, stoic way, like, does this person add value to my life right now? No. Okay. Bye.
Yeah.
Like, do I see someone that's like, oh, you add a lot of value to my life. Like, I will keep you. Actually, I will pin your conversation up here. So like, I know when you text me. So like, it's finding that, I think, and taking a step back and like, not quantifying, but analyzing. Like, these things work, these things don't. So I think those are what I've done. Now, in 6 months, I may be like, ah, shit, that sucked. But right now,
Do you consider yourself a minimalist?
As I stare at my closet of 30 soccer jerseys, no. Although they are qualified very much in detail, like I can't get rid of this one. But that's a dichotomy I've struggled with, like that consumer, that retail therapy, that, ooh, this shirt looks good, like this feels good. But I got to get rid of these things, and these things, to a point to where before moving out to Oregon, I made things simplest as possible back home. And it's just hopefully come August, September, when I'm on my own again, I can dial things down. Quasi.
So you are in a house of four people. You live with three women, which for a lot of guys, I imagine, is probably the dream. What is that experience like for you? Well, let me take that back, because I am close with a lot of girls. I think me and you had this conversation on the podcast last time around about how we kind of, you know, shout out to all the guys that we're friends with in our lives, but we're just more comfortable around women for whatever reason. And so I know when I'm visiting one of my best girlfriends and we're with all her girlfriends, so then it's one guy and eight girls. It can be a lot. It can be a lot when you're around that many girls. So what is it like for you?
I mean, I know we talked about it last time, but I grew up mostly girls. Like my mom and dad split. Me and my sister lived together with my mom, and then really only had my uncle as a kid. So I say I'm used to it, but I'm not. Like the past 2 years has been the first time where I've craved that male conversation or just hanging out with a guy, which sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, right.
But it's like, I also, we were talking about earlier, as a teacher, I just had a lady come up to me the other day. I was standing in the hallway and she was like, "Oh, it's so good to see a male teacher." And I was like, yeah, that is part of the reason why I decided to do this profession. I want to be there for those kids to see that. But also 90% of my day is surrounded by women. To some people, that is a dream, but it is tough. There are innate things that we are different with. And it's tough to have the conversation sometimes to where it's I don't want to seem patriarchal or hierarchical coming from just saying things or whatnot, because you have to be very self-aware. Like we were talking about earlier, I am a single straight male who grew up in the Northeast, very WASPy. I check all those boxes that people we need to change things. And I agree, we do. But also the way going through some of the things and talking to people and dealing with them, it's tough to control. I literally coach myself through saying things to make sure that I don't incite a conversation that doesn't have to be had to where it's I know where the landmines are. There's things I have to be cognizant of too. And they're fun. We get along all the time. I will say, I think one trait, and you may be able to talk about this too, but one trait that guys have, it's we tend to to be alone. I don't know what it is, but I've had the conversation with a few of my guy friends across various stages of life. We tend to just recluse ourselves and chill out by ourselves, or want to be alone more so than women. They kind of stick together, yeah, which is admirable. Yeah, I think that's the biggest trait where it's I would love to chill and chat with you, but I kind of want to go hang out by myself right now.
Yeah.
Y'all are loud. When we're out and about and having fun, I love the energy. I appreciate it. I admire it. I'm kind of jealous of it. I don't have that. I'm very reserved until tequila shots come into play. And then it's fun and energetic.
Limoncello.
Yeah, limoncello. Ooh, yeah. No,
you're a fan.
Yeah, I haven't had that in a while, actually. But yeah, it's fun. It's eye-opening, I will say. Because I'm used to living with my mom's 64. That's a different generation. My sister is, we're the same generation, so same thought processes. But these girls are two or three years younger than me, which is a topic in general. I have an older soul, I guess, sometimes. That too plays into it. But it's realizing let me tune into this and help me out here, what's going on. So it's lovely, it's fun. But yeah, at times I'm just I really want to just be by myself with my guy friends, probably not talking about anything. We'll just sit in a room by ourselves with a drink and just sit there and not talk for hours. And I love that shit. I don't know why. admittedly, it's probably weird. In college, with my roommate, we would just sit downstairs and just stare at like a TV. Some things like shows on or whatever, but like someone coming be like, what y'all doing? And like, oh, we're hanging out. And like, are you hanging out? Or are you just like happen to be in the same room? Like, no, we're hanging out. Are you talking? No. Then you're not hanging out. But at that quality time, I was like, oh, this is nice. Like, I'm going to Denver for Easter.
Respect.
To see said friend. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is sitting alone with him in a room and just chatting. If that. As like a just debrief, which I think that's the biggest difference between living with all girls and not.
Last question for you, and I so appreciate you joining me. So we were both history students in college, and the history books are kind of being, I don't want to say assaulted right now, but the way that we teach history in our schools in this country is being questioned, is being revisited, mostly when it comes to how do we teach slavery, how do we teach the mistreatment of Black people throughout the history of the United States and before. So I'm just kind of wondering, what are your thoughts on, this is a dumb question, but how should we teach history to our kids? Because when you and I grew up, we kind of got the fairy tale version of history when it came to a lot of things. Now, we grew up in a region that was that had a heavy Native American influence. And so Christopher Columbus was a hero. He had a holiday. Thanksgiving was a celebration. We never really learned too much. You know, you hear about the Trail of Tears, you gloss over it, and that was kind of the only thing. That we were really taught about the mistreatment of natives, and then ditto for Black people. I think we learned an adequate amount about the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s, but before that, there's a lot of stuff that's glossed over, a lot of things that happened that we just downplayed, lied about. And I know in different regions of the country, you and I can speak to the Northeast, but now that you're in the Pacific Northwest, you have a different experience with education. So I'm just wondering, how should we be teaching history to our kids today?
I will say, like, the politician in me, like, this issue is going to win 2024 for whoever can frame it properly. Like, you are messing with children, adults, concepts that have been around for centuries that are not great objectively. But, like, that critical aspect of critical race theory is critically thinking, which is a common standard across the board in every education class you take. How can you get these kids to think critically about life, whether it's social science or any class, like the scientific method or this formula in math? How can you critically assess how to get this answer? And I think people get hung up on verbiage because it sounds good. People work so hard to market things like, oh, where you look on the shelf, I'm going to buy that one. To where we fall victim to that. But I think it has to be a conversation. History is a conversation. It repeats itself. It is cyclical. Like, and I think, to be blunt, people have to stop being lazy about it. Like, we all know atrocities happen everywhere. Every country is guilty of an atrocity. Now, am I saying that, like, these fourth graders should know about it per se? Am I saying like these little kids should know about like Jefferson having a million kids with slaves and then having his white kids be served on by his Black kids? No, I'm saying as you grow older, you have to come to fruition and realize, hey, this is fucked up. So it's building those skills. Education is perpetual. We have this idea of, I need A, B, C, and D grades, or 95, 100, or 105. Or if I don't do that, I'm not going to get into college. And if I don't get into college, I'm just going to like not care about it and just go work a job. That's in and of itself isn't going to make you survive. Like, there's a whole shift that has to happen to where you have to hone this skill of being able to read something about history and be like, okay, what's going on? Like, what happened? So you learn that at a little age, and then, yeah, geography, you learn about that. Cultural diffusion, you learn about that. But with cultural diffusion, you're diluting at an extent. To where with Columbus, we learned triangle trade was great. It brought tomatoes to Italy. We got pizza now.
Everyone and we got along.
Cocoa beans. Yeah. Thanksgiving. Like, nah, that shit sucked. Like, And like I say that with like I guarantee you I can trace ancestors to the first Thanksgiving. To where it's like, am I proud of that? Not really. It's kind of it's not great. So like it's giving them the tools to solve problems themselves and move on, while also giving them like this is US history in terms of the United States of America did this thing in the past, and you should learn about it because it framed our country. But also, we don't want to repeat some of the things. We don't want to repeat the Trail of Tears. We don't want to repeat telling people they're not human. Like, okay, 3/5 of you is human. That's it. I'm sorry. You didn't make the cut. Like, we also have to realize politicians, the things that come out of politics are compromises. Like, they're not great. They're not supposed to be great. You're supposed to be perpetually making a more perfect union, which we may, some may say we have it, we have not. It's, we're lacking our values at some point. Like the morals of a society in general dictate things they go, which teaching history, I think you need to give them the skills to communicate and read and write and assess while also giving them these key events happened leading to this. Like, hey, if you going back to like what we talked about in general, like World War II and World War I, you had secret alliances. Like, if you're being shady and you don't tell us and we attack you, I don't want to get blasted by 7 people. Like, we need to be able to talk. Like, we need to have conversations about everything. And like, over time, they get deeper. To like, I'm not talking to my 6th graders about certain things, but my 8th graders, we damn well are talking about them. Because you're going to go to high school next year, and shit's going to hit the fan. Like, you are going to learn about things that are crazy. Same thing where it's like, if I teach college, they'll get a different conversation than my freshmen. Because my job is to prepare you for the real world. Like, yes, pass this test, learn this fact, but you have to be able to assess in a real life situation, real life conversation. Like, if you are sitting with someone in 10 years, how can you converse with them politely, respectfully, and eloquently to get the conversation going to affect change? So we're like, it is a tough thing to do because it's polarized, people get angry, people fight. And like right now, yeah, like some teachers go too far and say things, but you have to realize we're learning this shit too. Not the actions, we knew about them, but we're learning A, how to answer this question, Troy, if you can't tell, I'm spinning some tires. But like, also, like, how do I tell parents that I'm not trying to be crazy? I'm teaching your child what happened, which is my job. And to the child, like, I'm not telling you you are this. I'm telling you this happened in the past. We just don't want you to repeat it. Like, in the podcast I listened to this morning, they were like, everything happens on a 10-year cycle. There's an epidemic, a pandemic, a stock market crash, a terrorist attack. Something major happens every 10 years. Like, you can go back from the fall of the Soviet Union in 91, beginning in 89, to now, every 10 years, something has hit the fan, and our response is the same shit every time. The goal is to be better and like move that baton to the next runner and make things a little better. And I think we've lost our way in that. And I think because we've lost our way in that, we're afraid to admit we fucked up. To where, like, you should learn about them. But you also can't come into it afraid of what's going to come up. Because I've gone into lessons teaching where it's like, I think this lesson, like, it's a poem about, like, poetry invokes a lot of emotion. That's why it's great. But if it's that wrong emotion, people are not going to like it. So it's making that, it's building those relationships with parents and kids that you know that I'm not trying to indoctrinate anyone. I'm just saying these X events happened. Can we assess them on values, whether it's in a Catholic school or whether it's in a public school? Like, how can we learn about this and realize we don't want to do that again? Like, I don't want to walk in to a place and see, okay, that water fountain I can't drink out of. This water fountain you can drink out of. Like, I don't want that. I don't want to see that. And I don't want things to be repeated like, okay, in 10 years when 2030 is a thing and there's another epidemic. I want it to stay an epidemic. I don't want it to be a pandemic. Like, I want that shit to stay in the epicenter in which it started, because we learned how to deal with things and how to communicate with other people and how we can solve problems. And it's just, history's tough because you weren't there when it happened. You're not going to be here when it continues. And you're just stuck in this purgatory of going back and forth and being like, okay, current events are history, but I can't talk about them. But then in the past, I wasn't there. I shouldn't talk about it. So it's dealing with that balance and homeostasis. Like, you have to be able to think objectively and accept that we're not going to always agree on things. And then talking to people, communicating, and things will be tough. It's nature of the game when you're talking about the winning side of history being taught mostly in schools. Like, those textbooks are winning. Like, you don't go interview like the Bengals, like a few of them, but you're not going to interview every single Bengal player and like write a book about how they lost the Super Bowl. You're going to interview the Rams because like they just won. They're happy. They're fun. So like, it's realizing, I think, that we need to like cover these things. They're going to be tough, but we're learning about them so we don't repeat them, sort of thing. And I know that's long-winded and difficult probably to figure out, but it's a tough answer, honestly.
The most important part of that answer, which I thank you for, listen, keep an open mind, have a healthy discussion where even if two sides disagree on something, you can walk away from that conversation having heard each other out, with respect for one another, not name-calling, not belittling, not degrading. I think that has tremendously been lost in the last 5-6 years and accelerated by the pandemic, the ability to connect with one another in that way, in a civil way. That is the most disgusting thing to me in today's society. I don't care what you believe, just as long as you will have a healthy conversation with me about it. So that is what I took away. Most importantly, that's what I want people to take away from this portion of the podcast. Matt, thank you so much for joining me. It has been a pleasure to have you on again. I know it will happen again in the future. I look forward to coming back to the Pacific Northwest in the future. I got to get back out there. Enjoy Denver over Easter. I am very jealous. And tell all the girls on Hinge, hi for me, and the girls that you live with as well. And best of luck with everything.
I will, man. Thank you so much. This is an honor, like, to sit down and chat with you. You're always welcome in the PNW, wherever the heck I end up. Like, open door policy. And yes, I will tell the roommates and everyone, hello, we're going to get some pizza following this. So much appreciated, my man. And I wish I had the mug, but it's at school. So we shall do it again with it.